Okay, right, we're back on. Hopefully well fed and watered, and we'll proceed into this next part. So we're up to agenda item, we've done agenda item 15, so we're making good progress. Agenda item 16 relates to requirement 34, which is to do with the Sustainable Fuel Transport Management Plan. And the question, there's two points here. Applicant to state why requirement 34 still does not refer to the proposed Transport Liaison Committee as discussed with the Canal and River Trust. And applicant to make explicit the term periodically at requirement 34, brackets 5. So 2 points there for the applicant to ponder and let us know about, if you would please.
Thank you. So on the first point, regarding the Transport Liaison Committee, you're correct in pointing out that the wording is agreed with the Canal and River Trust, and that's in the Statement of Common Ground. The intention is that the plan that's submitted and agreed will effectively have a Transport Liaison Committee, so we don't feel it's necessary to explicitly refer to it in the requirement itself, and that was the approach also taken on the planning condition on FM1 as well. That doesn't explicitly refer to the Transport Liaison Committee.
But there will be a committee.
Having said that, it's not, it's a major point for us in terms of...
Your proposal is to effectively refer to it in more generic terms within the DCO. Is that the idea?
Correct.
Yeah, correct. And in relation to the second point, we've reviewed that, and we take the point there that reference to periodically isn't very precise.
No.
So what we are proposing is that the revised draft DCO that will be submitted at deadline forward refer to a period of 5 years, so there's a clear review period.
It's a review every 5 years, okay. Well, I guess the agency most interested in that is the Canal and River Trust, and they're not here today, but... if you obviously make that point as part of your representation today, we'll see what they say at deadline 4. Does anybody else have a view on that? A 5-year review period for the Sustainable Fuel Transport Management Plan? That was really to do with the extent to which it would be possible to use rail and or canals, barges, to transport the fuel. The applicant has... already gone some way to making it clear that, first of all, there will be a rail link available, provided the fuel is available at the appropriate points to make rail viable, and similarly with the canal. So the question here was, over what period, at what frequency would you review that situation in regard to sustainability? You're now saying every 5 years. Let's wait and see what the Canal and River Trust says, unless anybody else has got a comment on that. No? Okay. Let's move on then to agenda item 17, requirement 36, air quality emissions reduction. Applicant to clarify the meaning of the statement, assuming the diesel generators operate all year round. And that's in a reference to the applicant's response to my questions at deadline 1. I think we didn't quite know what it meant to say to have the diesel generators operating all year round. So if you'd clarify that for us, please.
Certainly, yes. It's just a point of clarification. The diesel generators will operate only for up to 100 hours in a year. But when we do the assessment of air quality impacts, we run the dispersion model as if they were running all year round to make sure we identify the worst-case meteorological conditions that we can then present as part of the environmental statement. So it's not our intention to run them all year round. They will be restricted running to 100 hours or less.
My understanding is that, I'm not up to speed on the technicalities, but my understanding is they're there to make sure that you've got the right temperature for the burners to operate with the fuel, the normal fuel. So therefore, you would not expect to operate them very much at all, really.
Well, there are two slightly distinct points there. The diesel generators are used for the start-up if the if the plant needs to start from cold and the other line isn't already online, that's what the diesel generators would be used for. There will be additional supplementary firing of diesel fuel during the operation of the process if needed to maintain the temperature, as you quite correctly point out. We need to maintain temperature to maintain compliance with the Industrial Emissions Directive.
Do you propose to amend the DCO to reflect this point, Agenda Point 17?
No, I don't think we need to make any changes to the DCO. It was just the wording we'd used in the air quality assessment to say we'd assessed as if they were running all year round, but we don't think any change is needed for the DCO itself.
No. Okay, thank you very much. And Agenda Item 18 relates to Requirement 37, which is air quality monitoring. Applicant to clarify whether the additional background monitoring data started for FM1 has been or will be used for the FM2 assessment. And a second point, Wakefield and Selby to confirm their agreement to the modified baseline and the wording of Requirement 37 in the draft DCO, excuse me, at deadline 2, with regard to bringing Requirement 37 more in line with FM1 conditions. We may have covered part of that in previous discussion, but first point first, applicant to clarify whether the additional background monitoring data started for FM1 has been or will be used for the FM2 assessment.
So the data was gathered over a period of a year to understand what the annual average concentrations are at Brotherton, and that was only completed in November 2014. So the reporting was then completed early 2015. So the data wasn't available at the time of our submission for FM2. And we aren't proposing to reevaluate that at this stage using that data. But what we can say is that the results of that year's monitoring at Brotherton are consistent with the assumptions made within the FM2 DCO air quality assessment. And it doesn't change any of the conclusions relating to that assessment.
Okay. Wakefield and Selby, your response to Requirement 37, the wording of Requirement 37, and in particular the request to bring that in line with the FM1 conditions. We may already have answered that earlier, actually, I'm not sure. Your response to that?
I can confirm that has been agreed.
So I'm struggling to hear, I'm afraid.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I can confirm that it's been agreed for monitoring going forward.
The wording has been agreed for Requirement 37. Okay. Thank you very much. And Selby, I understand, by the way, that you're only recently in post by about a week, so I do appreciate you may not be...
Again, I'm going to defer to my colleagues at WMDC and that they've been working with our own EHO, so we accept... just been said by...
Okay. No outstanding issue there with item 18, then. Item 19 relates to requirement 42, which is decommissioning financial security in relation to the decommissioning costs of the Ferrybridge Multifuel 2 development. Applicant and Wakefield to state their positions with regard to Wakefield's proposal to include a subsection 6 relating to decommissioning responsibility. So that was your proposal in one of your submissions, Wakefield, that you would welcome a new section, subsection 6. I think I recall seeing the applicant saying they didn't regard it as necessary, but maybe you can update us on that.
I think we took the view on this that we didn't really feel it was a necessary change. My reading of the local impact report was that Wakefield weren't raising concerns about financial security, but they suggested this clause to go into the requirement. I think the requirement as drafted is quite clear because it requires the undertaker to submit a scheme for approval of decommissioning, and then they have to implement that scheme as approved. So I don't think it's necessary to include that. And just looking at other DCOs, and apologise again for mentioning Nottingley, they don't seem to have that sort of wording in either. So I think what we've got is sufficient, in our view.
Wakefield. Are you okay with that?
I think the council would prefer it was included.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
The council would prefer that the additional item was included.
There we are. Council would prefer that wording to be in there.
I think the only points I'd make on that, if it is included, I think it needs to refer to the operator, I believe.
The owner.
Oh, sorry, the owner.
Yes, indeed. I may actually ask you to take it away for consideration anyway then, and take it from there.
Okay.
Thank you. Item 20 relates to the statement of common ground between the applicant and Wakefield, but also the other ones between with Selby and North Yorkshire County Council. And this was an invitation really for all parties involved in those statements of common ground to state their positions in relation to those statements of common ground, identifying any matters not yet agreed and stating whether they intend to provide updated statements of common ground by deadline 4. So I think we've already had an update on the one between the applicant and Wakefield. That's right, isn't it? You've now agreed and signed a statement of common ground?
We're not in a position to have signed one yet. We've had a further meeting, so the intention is to submit a signed, agreed one by deadline 4.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because there were one or two matters still outstanding, weren't there? Yeah. But by deadline 4, you're anticipating having one?
Yes, we do. I mean, there's very few matters outstanding. So.
With Selby and North Yorkshire County Council?
In relation to Selby and North Yorkshire, quite early in the process, we approached North Yorkshire and they advised that they, from their perspective, they didn't see the need for a statement of common ground. So we've only progressed on with Selby. We've produced a draft of that and we've updated that recently to reflect the Selby local impact report and the comments in that. So we'll be submitting that to Selby over the course of the next week. The intention again that is signed and agreed by deadline 4.
Okay. Is that your understanding as well, Selby?
That's my understanding, sir, yes.
Okay. I think those were the only outstanding statements of common ground. Were there any others in the pipeline that were remaining to be signed?
There aren't, sir. Everything else is agreed, so they're the only outstanding two.
Making almost a royal flash of about 10 of them by the time you're through, isn't it? Quite
before,
a few.
Before we try and get to double figures.
Thank you very much. Item 21 relates to the Statement of Reasons, Section 1.24, private treaties for acquiring all necessary land within the Development Consent Order. That's the subject matter. Applicant to state the position between itself and SSE Generation Limited with regard to the granting of a lease to the applicant for the construction and operation of the proposed development. Obviously, there's a close relationship between yourselves and SSE Generation, but there needs to be the formal paperwork in place. So what's the position on that?
I've got a sort of updated statement on the land ownership position, sir, from SSE. There is a representative here from SSE today if you need further detail on it, but what they've advised is that the landowner, SSE Generation Limited, has currently issued a letter of comfort confirming that terms have been agreed and the parties propose to enter into agreements. The parties intend to enter into an agreement for lease, followed by a construction lease, and finally an operating lease. And as you'll be aware, sir, SSE Generation Limited is also part of the sort of 50-50 joint venture with Wheeler Brayter that forms the applicant Multifuel Energy Limited. So, in effect, SSE Generation is incentivised to grant the necessary land rights. And on that basis, that is why we have not sought CPO rights within the DCA. So that's the current position with regard to land ownership. But as I say, there's somebody here today if you feel you need some further clarification on that side.
Who is that person?
Hazel Scott from SSE.
Oh, Hazel Scott. Would you just wait for the microphone, then you can have a chance to say a few words, if you would, please.
Certainly. My name's Hazel Scott. I'm Head of Legal Infrastructure for SSE PLC. the position is as stated, and the parties will be progressing the necessary agreements as quickly as we can, basically. So we're quite happy to enter into the necessary land agreements, so that's why there's no requirement for the DCO.
Do you foresee any impediments to the process going ahead?
No, not smoothly? Seeing any impediments.
Okay. Anyone else see any impediments to that process going ahead?
Yes, just clarify that FM1 is going through the same process. So there are agreements in being put in place for FM1. So the agreements for FM2 will be...
Well, that's several years ahead, isn't it? So the fact that they're not yet in place for FM1 suggests that it's not necessarily a very simple process to conclude. Or is that not the case?
No, I mean, solicitors have been instructed and they are drafting those agreements as we speak.
Okay.
And we don't foresee any issues at this stage.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Could I just also comment regarding item 19, that the item you've just been discussing is of relevance to item 19, because Wakefield's concern with that item would be that there was any confusion over responsibility with regard to decommissioning in terms of operator, owner, license holder, etc. So it was absolutely clear. So just to a small addition to that point.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Bearing in mind what Wakefield have just said, what's your take on that?
We would expect the owner of the facility at the time to be responsible for the decommissioning, and I think the development consent order can reflect that.
So once the legal work's done, it would be perfectly clear who the owner is and where the responsibility lies for decommissioning in the future.
Yes.
Is that your position? Is that clear enough?
Yeah. Well, that's the concern of Wakefield, to make sure that the position is clear at the end of, you know, when they would get to that point.
I'm just wondering how we get to the clarity that you feel you need. That's the thing.
Well, that's why Wakefield would prefer to have that additional
clause at at requirement 42, wasn't it?
Yes.
Subsection 6.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's the argument behind having that extra clause in there. So if you can take that away and give it due consideration, please, that would be good. Thank you. Right, so that's private treaties. And then we've got agenda item 22, which is to do with the environmental permit. And this was really for the Environment Agency to state whether it would be able and willing to submit an update on the status of the environmental permit, the application, in relation to this timescale and whether duly made by deadline 4. And part of their response from yesterday was a response to this agenda item, where they said, "We are in a position to provide an update on the status of the environmental permit application. The Environment Agency received an environmental permit application from the applicant for this site on the 23rd of December 2014. The first stage in our assessment process is to undertake a completeness check of the application with the Environment Agency, which the Environment Agency describes as duly making. As discussed in our response to the examining authority's first written questions, this is equivalent to the PINS acceptance stage, inasmuch as it means that there is sufficient information to progress the determination, but it does not indicate whether or not a permit is likely to be granted. We can now confirm that this stage in our assessment process is now complete, and the duly made date for the environmental permit application is confirmed as the 14th of January 2015. And they go on to say, work has now commenced on the determination of the permit. This includes public advertising of the application, consultation with relevant bodies, and the technical assessment aspects such as air quality, noise, odour, etc. This stage in our assessment process is estimated to take until the end of July 2015. The outcome of this stage will be a decision as to whether we are minded to grant a permit or not. It should be noted that if we are minded to grant a permit, further stages of consultation may then follow." And what we've noted before is that there is no way that the environmental permit will come through before this examination is concluded, but that's very typical. for examinations of this sort anyway. So that does not indicate any kind of problem or impediment, but that does at least give us the time frame that the Environment Agency envisages. They haven't really answered my question as to whether they'll give us an updated deadline for, but I might give them a bit of a nudge on that one and just ask them to do that as well. But we won't get much more, I think, than what they've already said, basically, because they won't have reached the next key stage by deadline four.
And just as a slight update from our perspective, we have been in correspondence with the Environment Agency through the permit determination process, and the only other additional information I can give is they said that due to the high quality of the application, they are expecting to progress with the determination quickly, and they will be coming back to us if they need any further questions or clarifications. They're expecting to come back in mid-April on that, so that will be another position when we can give you an update on how those are progressing.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that a deadline for then, I guess, if you're in a position to do that. Thank you very much. Right, number 23, we're almost there, actually. This is in relation to National Grid Electricity Transmission and their relevant representation. because they hadn't submitted anything since, the question to them was for them to state whether they required any protective provisions in the draft development consent order, and for the applicant and National Grid to state their positions on a possible private treaty agreement, which was mentioned in the DCO, but certainly somewhere. So let's take those two points. National Grid, we received something from them, basically saying that everything's progressing well, I think. Where's my piece of paper? Yesterday, negotiations have reached a satisfactory conclusion in regard to this agenda item. That's National Grid saying that. And I don't think we've got anything other than that. We had an earlier communication 4 days earlier saying they wouldn't be attending the hearing, but the negotiations were going well. And as I say, they followed that by saying that negotiations had reached a satisfactory conclusion. Is that your view, applicant?
I think, sir, there's a further communication from National Grid, which I saw yesterday, which I believe was also sent to PINS, which confirms they've withdrawn their representations and that all matters are effectively agreed, so there's no need for basically their sort of rights are protected for existing private treaties, so there's no need for protective provisions or any other form of agreement.
No need for any further private treaties to give them necessary access and so on.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. We'll look forward to seeing their statement on that in writing and obviously yours as well as a result of this meeting. But that sounds like it's closed off. Okay, well, that's good. So we've reached the end of all the main agenda items. The item 24 was any other proposed amendments to the deadline to draft development consent order raised by any interested parties, really. So has anyone got anything else they'd want to raise by way of proposed amendments to the draft ECO for the applicant to take on board for consideration? Let's go around the table. Selby?
I can confirm that we've got no other proposed amendments to the draft ECO.
Thank you very much, sir. And Wakefield?
The number of items under still to be finalised.
The ones we've already dealt with, yes. That's fine. We got those noted as part of the recording of this meeting. Has anyone else got any proposed amendments to the DCO? Nope. No further proposed amendments to the DCO. Thank you very much, then. And
sorry, apologies, sir. Can I just mention one thing in relation to the DCO, which is probably worth raising? There is an additional requirement we'll be including in relation to an employment and skills plan, and this follows discussions with Wakefield Regeneration, partly in relation to the statement of common ground, and that will effectively mirror what was agreed on Nottingley in that respect. So that will appear in the next version.
Okay. That's very good. Thank you very much. If I can just go through the material received yesterday, you may wish to just to take us through what that's intended to achieve. And then, so the items received yesterday were the indicative landscaping plan, both in track changes mode and clean version, consents and licences required under other legislation, the current draft statement of common ground with Wakefield, that's at version 4, revision 4, the application document index, the landscape strategy, again in two versions, track changes and clean, and the biodiversity strategy in track changes and clean. So those are the ones you sent through. Do you want to say anything about that into this meeting?
Just briefly explain the purpose. So the application document index is purely intended to hopefully assist you just in understanding what are the current documents and what documents have been superseded up to this point. So that's just an update on a document we provided at the application stage. The consents and licences document, that was submitted at application stage. So this relates to the consents and licences that are required for development outside the DCO. So again, this is purely an update on that position since we submitted the application back in July last year, which hopefully will be helpful.
Just on that, are there any impediments that you can foresee in regard to licensing?
Not that we're aware of, no.
No, okay, thank you.
And then the landscape, the updated landscape and biodiversity strategies, they reflect the discussions with the Yorkshire Wildlife Trust in terms of introducing this magnesium grassland at the site. So it's really just incorporating those because they will be certified documents under the DCO, so we wanted to ensure those reflected the up-to-date position. And there's a landscaping plan that also accompanies the landscaping document. And then, as you point out, there's the statement of common ground with Wakefield, which has moved on again, but we don't propose to issue anything else now until deadline 4, and that will hopefully be the final agreed version.
Yorkshire Wildlife Trust, in their submission yesterday, said they were happy that their comments had been addressed by the applicant. You mentioned that under item 8. So, are you envisaging a statement of common ground, or is that not necessary with them?
I don't think we believe that's necessary, sir. There were sort of meeting notes that were agreed back in December that we submitted.
Okay, thank you. I interrupted your flow, so was there anything else you were about to say about those documents?
No, there wasn't. That was it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Right. item 25, is any other matters raised by the examining authority? I haven't got any more to raise. I've been raising them as we've been going along. So is there any other matters that anyone wants to raise today? Anything at all that's can be usefully lodged into this hearing?
No.
Nope. Everyone's expressing satisfaction, so in which case I shall draw this issue specific hearing on the draft development consent order to a close, and wish you all a very good morning and very good afternoon. So thank you very much for your contributions.
Thank you.
Bye bye.